Okay, so, and preparing a lecture here, I decided to find some topic which can marry electron transport and physics of glasses. And my collaborators are former PhD student Joachim Bergley, he will continue in Princeton as a postdoc right now, a team from St. Petersburg Yoff Institute, and also I'm thankful for discussions with that people. So what's all that about? Decoherence is a fashionable word now, and people use it in different contexts, mostly regarding quantum computation, qubits, and so on. So if you have some quantum state and you're preparing some initial state, due to interaction with environment, the coherence breaks. But the point that you cannot speak about decoherence in general, because the coherence depends on the initial quantum state which you have constructed. I will speak about very special quantum state, which is important for weak localization. This is interference between electronic state and the state reversed in time. And I'll explain why it's important for the problem of weak localization. So first I will give an overview of the situation. And then I will discuss decoherence due to some disorder-induced defects, dynamic defects which has internal degrees of freedom, which can move between two states. And because of that motion, they interacting with electrons, they lead to decoherence. That was the main topic. And I start with qualitative consideration, then discuss the result for identical dynamical defects, what they would do. And then a very important point, what the model should be used to average over different defects and how this spread in different parameters is important. Finally, I will tell what is not understood yet, and in the very end, depending on time, I will put some details on calculations, how we did these calculations. So suppose we are interested in a very simple problem. We have two electrodes, and we are interested in transport of non-interacting electrons with the De Broglie wavelengths is much shorter than mean free paths. So they move like free particles until colliding with some impurities. So these paths are diffusive paths. And if I want to calculate probability to be from at point B, starting from point A, we get the following. We have to add amplitudes and then take square of absolute values. And this is a classical probability. And this is interference term. Usually this is a very small term because the sample is big, Fermi momentum is large, so all these paths, they have different phases, and after average you get next to nothing. Except for one specific case of the trajectories which have self-crossings. So in this trajectory you have clockwise and counterclockwise motion, and any static disorder cancels out from the phase difference. Then the interference term for this closed loop becomes large, and actually it's four times one amplitude squared. So the probability to return increases, and that means the decreasing in transport. This is weak, so-called weak localization phenomenon. So would this trajectory be majority of electron trajectory? The effect will be big. But it's not easy to find this trajectory. The probability to find them is small. And this is why small corrections. Let me estimate this. So let's do let's consider two-dimensional case, for example. And this is the interference volume. The cross section is about De Broglie wavelengths of an electron. And for time dt, all the electron density from this volume passes through this impurity which I'm interested in. If I have diffusive motion, the distance covered for time t is square root dt, and the volume b dt by b is the thickness. I'm interested in two-dimensional case. So the probability to be in this volume is given by this ratio. And to get the contribution to conductance, we have to integrate it over time, over trajectory time. The lower limit is most obvious. This is collision time, because diffusion approximation works only at times bigger than mean free time. But this is logarithmic integral, so it diverges at both limits in two dimensions. And that means that upper limit can be either set by size of your sample or at finite temperature. The interference can be broken because there is some interaction which leads to decoherence. This time is called dephasing or decoherence time. And so we got the following in two dimensions, minus log tau phi divided by tau. And in principle, one could extract tau phi from this expression, but it's not very good, because this is small correction to a big quantity. It's just correction. So what people do about that, they apply magnetic field. And the magnetic field replaces momentum by kinematic momentum. And it means that clockwise and counterclockwise waves, they gain opposite phase shifts. And magnetic field just leads to dephasing, which is just ratio of the magnetic flux embedded in the diffusive loop divided by magnetic flux quantum. So that means very weak magnetic field, in fact. And that means that the result, at some magnetic field, which is given by this estimate, magnetic field dephases all that, and the weak localization correction vanishes. So you have magnetoresistance in very small magnetic fields, comparing to classical magnetic fields. And this is a way to find out this tau phi. The life is a bit more complicated, because the formula is a bit more complicated, but I don't want to go to the details right now. The science has produced all necessary formulas for that. So suppose you are able to extract this phase-breaking time, then you have to compare it with a theory. Well, conventional results like that. The tau phi is just inelastic relaxation time, because elastic processes are not important. Elastic phase shifts cancel out. And due to phonons, it should be proportional to T cube, textbook result. An electron-electron interaction gives T squared in a clean system. If you have disorder, in fact, disorder increases dephasing due to electron-electron interaction, because electrons move diffusively and spend more time close to each other. And the result obtained by Altshuler and Aronoff is just like that. It's proportional to time, to temperature T up to the first power. And in my samples, that was observed experimentally, and people could really compare experiments with a theory. Until recent years, by some experiments conducted at very low temperature, they showed that the dephasing rate saturates at some value at very low temperatures. So these are results for gold films, and this other result for by other group by this alloy films. So it goes down rate, and then it saturates. That was a big puzzle, and it started big activity and hard discussions. What could be the reason of that? And many people who attended conferences could be witness of very, very hard discussions about that. So the first explanation, that this is just an artifact of experiment. We have some electromagnetic fields. And this electromagnetic field, they produce some fields on in the sample, which causes dephasing, like thermally-induced electrical fluctuations. And that was suggested by Altshuler and Kravtsov. And up to now, quite recently, was a very careful experimental work which tried to check it. Probably this is not the reason, because they took the same cryostat and the same electromagnetic conditions, put different samples. And they, some samples they saw this kind of situation, in other samples they didn't. So probably they claim that this effect should be ruled out. So something inside is not an artifact of experiment. Then it was some suggestion that zero-point vibrations lead to dephasing. And that was the reason of very hot discussion, because in principle, it cannot be to decouple all this, to dephase all the system, you have to violate invariance with time reversal, which zero vibrations don't do. So there were several papers where they tried to analyze why it is incorrect. And the very recent preprint and CONMAT shows that if even experimentalists believe in that, they cannot fit experiments using these formulas. Well, the most plausible explanation is magnetic impurities. What happens if you have magnetic impurities? You have to remember that electrons have spin. And spins up and spin down, they are different quantum states. So electrons with different spins don't interfere at all. So you have to deal with a bit different machinery. You have to study singlets and triplets, and they relax in a different way. So instrumentally, you have different formulas, and you have analyzed your experimental data with different formulas and try to extract the data. Well, probably, according to the latest preprint, probably this is the case in good silver, gold, and copper wires. And still some problems remain, because the effect seems to be very sensitive to magnetic impurities. So they cannot really register that magnetic impurities independently. The add magnetic impurity effect is pronounced, but it's not clear what happens in this particular sample. So it's still under the border of sensitivity. And finally, there was some idea that the inelastic scattering can be produced by some structural defect which exist in any disordered system and very pronounced in glasses. So these defects with the internal degrees of freedom, then they produce some time-dependent potentials and they can produce some inelastic scattering, so why not? There are several papers regarding this. First, it was addressed in the paper by this authors. And where they tried to feed the experiment. And they used a two-channel Condé model to study these two-level systems. Probably this is not the case. We tried to analyze very carefully this model and how it was used to interpret experiments. We came to conclusion that this is just due to some mistake in treating this two-channel Condé model. Then there were two papers where people studied more or less structural two-level systems used under the Halperin-Wharton model for glasses. And they studied resonant processes, an electron-excited two-level system, changed states between two levels, and that was an inelastic process which produced the dephasing. So actually we try to put this model and try to see if we believe in this model. What kind of conclusions can we make? And we think that if you are stuck to this model, it's too many two-level systems required to provide this dephasing. It could not be that many two-level systems. If you have that many, you will see it in some other characteristics which are not seen in the metals. So we started we continue to work with two-level systems. That's what I'm speaking about today. So what are new features of this? First, I have to tell that there are two mechanisms of dephasing produced by this two-level system or this effective spins. And one mechanism is just to real transitions between the levels, and another mechanism is because the two-level system interacts with thermal bus, so they fluctuate between two states and they produce just time-dependent potential acting on electrons. And because of that, you don't have exact conservation law. This can also lead to decoherence. And the second message which I want to discuss is what a model should we use to average over different two-level systems. And what we think that the model which is used for glasses by Anderson and company and Philips is probably not the case for quite good metals, and instead of that we want to suggest some other model. Okay, first I will try to just give results without calculations. So we have a loop, and let's consider very slow varying potential u from some environment acting upon electrons. So this is the action along the trajectory, and due to this potential we can expand and together change in this action. So the phase difference is given by this difference, and then we can assume that there is no special correlation between scattering centers. They change in time, but in space they are correlated, point-like defects for simplicity. So they are delta correlated on the trajectory side, and in time there is some correlation function of this potential. So if you assume that, we immediately get the following expression for the variance. So if this correlation function at small times is close to 1, then dephasing is suppressed and we have slow dephasing. At large times, this correlation function vanishes, and the dephasing time is given by inelastic relaxation rate. So we have two regimes of dephasing. And this time, typical time, is given, it should be found self-consistently. Because, yeah, please.
So now, I mean, what would be the difference between an ordinary vibration of an atom and a defect?
Just wait, I'll come to that. Of course, if you have a vibrating atom, you have the same. But the point is that this two-level system has very low frequency vibrations. Atoms have vibrations somehow like Debye frequency, and here you have a low frequency vibration. This is the point. Okay, so what are the defects? F, just let's come back. F is a correlation function of time-dependent potential. I will calculate it later. So for the model of structural defect is just a two-level system like a glass. You have some scatter in two positions. If there is no tunneling, they are in different wells, and tunneling makes the states hybrid. And this is a Hamiltonian for this defect. It has internal degrees of freedom. Okay, so now we come to two mechanisms. You have direct transitions between these levels. An electron scatters and excites the system, like scattering electrons with atoms, very simple. And then the phase relaxation, if energy transfer is large, the phase relaxation is the same as inelastic time due to these defects, phase relaxation time. What does it mean, large interlevel spacing? The large means that the energy must be bigger than inverse relaxation rate due to this interaction. That means that you have real transition, you have enough time to reset the phase, and the transition, quantum transition takes place. If time is not enough, quantum transition doesn't take place, so you don't reset your system. Then, if small e, small energy transfer before this, below this criterion, what we have? We have phase diffusion. So what we can estimate in a very simple way, the typical number of defects which a system, which electron meets during the loop is just trajectory time divided by this time, scattering time by the defect. The correlation function, if there is energy transfer E, something like cosine E squared T, this is small, so we expand it, and we can calculate typical phase shift, and from there the typical dephasing time is given by this estimate. It's slower diffusion. We have diffusion of phase instead of phase jumps. This is mechanism number one. So this is the estimate for the dephasing time for this mechanism. And then we have second mechanism, just because the system is fluctuates and the potential fluctuates in time. Then you have typical hopping rate of the system between the sites. The correlation function is just like that. And in a similar way, we get the estimate for relaxation rate, which contains the hopping between the states. So we have actually two mechanisms and two regimes, a lot of zoology, a lot of different cases. So let me try to discuss it. So suppose you have all this the same fluctuators, and if you do calculations more or less rigorously, I'll show you how to do that. You get the following results. We get the correction to delta sigma, and then we have the integral. In my naive formula, I put some tau phi at the upper limit, and here I have some factors which automatically make this integral convergent. And there are two mechanisms. This is a mechanism due to direct transitions, and this is mechanisms due to oscillations. So if you calculate that, you can calculate this formula, conductance. But this is not the end of the story. Then you have to understand what happens if you have some distribution of this defect. You have to average over this, over realization of these defects. They're different. So usually there are two traditional models for this kind of things. One model is actually was very successfully used for glasses, and this is so-called glass model by Anderson, Halperin, Warma, and Phillips. And according to this model, the diagonal splitting is smoothly distributed in some window, quite wide. And the tunneling overlap integral, lambda in my Hamiltonian, was of diagonal coupling of this states, I just recall you, was logarithmically smoothly distributed, because the idea was that the logarithm, which is just tunneling distance, is evenly distributed. And immediately you end up with this distribution function, a function. And in this situation, we have exponentially broad distribution of relaxation rate, which leads to many pronounced effects in structural glasses. If you adopt this model, it's very difficult to fit experimental data. You need too big density of two-level system, because it's assumed that they are spread in quite a broad region. But we don't think that this is the case in good metals, because this is actually a good metal and you have some defects. So probably the distribution for metals, which was called the tunneling states model by the people who suggested this model, is like that. Suppose that you have some more or less rigid lattice, and the defects are something like interstitials. So they can be in off-central position. So that means that the overlap integral between two states is mostly dictated by chemistry of this material, by bonds which are there. But instead of that, you have some long-range interaction which makes disorder, which makes diagonal disorder spread in some window. Later on, I'll give you a model for this long-range interaction. In my case, it will be Friedel oscillations due to electron-electron interaction. But anyway, the model is like that. You have some window in which the energy splittings are there, and the distribution of the tunneling amplitude is more or less peaked at some value. It's not important to have a delta function, but just important to be peaked. So then you have to average it, and if you do all this machinery, which contains a lot of calculations, you have some integrals which pinch with the limits, so I don't want to in this detail, we come to the following conclusion. So if temperature is not very small, bigger than some temperature which I'll estimate, the distribution is given by some the dephasing rate is given some by some factor times two contributions. This contribution is due to resonant process. It's of the order one in the scale, and this is the contribution of this apparent elastic scattering, which is bigger and goes proportional to T 1/3. What's important at the very small temperatures, when two level systems are frozen in the ground state, dephasing rate goes to zero. So we don't have miracles at zero temperature. Well, now we have to estimate all that. So if it, where we can take estimates, it's a very, very difficult problem because everything is in a black box. We use experiments on point contact conductance. So what you have some point contacts through some metals of similar type. And in this point contacts, you can observe zero bias anomalies. And you can observe telegraph noise. And from this, what's important, this is like a microscope, which can select one or two level systems, because only those systems which are in the region of electrical field concentration, they act, and people defects outside don't work at all. So this is a like microscope. We can look at this data and find out some statistics. So these experiments were done in Berkeley by Berman's group, mostly. It's Cornell, excuse me, it's Cornell. Excuse me. So that's what we got from these experiments. I cannot really bet that this is very good numbers, but that's what we have. And from that we get something like limiting temperatures about 10 mK, and in temperatures bigger than 10 mK, we can have slowing down dependence with a typical pre-exponential time 10 to minus 9. So in this way, being optimistic, we can fit experiments. So what, how we can convince ourselves? Because there is a lot of explanations. Well, it's a good idea to find something else which could also be explained by a similar model. And quite recently, a surprising feature was observed in 3D disordered metals. People studied the dephasing, weak localization, together with conductance without magnetic field. And they found a correlation that the bigger the conductance, the shorter the decoherence time. So naively speaking, you introduce defects, you spoil your sample, you have also you have to kill conductance as well. It's quite opposite. Roughly speaking, it's inversely proportional to diffusion constants or to the conductance. So is it possible to explain this dependence using this model? So what we need, in our model there is only one parameter, the spread of diagonal disorder, the window where diagonal disorder is spread. So we think the following, that if you have one side, and suppose this is a two-level system, the defect which can be in two sides and it bounces between these two sides. So how it knows about some other defects? It knows because electrons first scatter some static defect and then they come to this defect. And because of this scattering produces 3D oscillations here, which renormalize the energy of the one component. So we can do rather simple estimates. This is order of magnitude estimate for this renormalization. Then we can write down the difference between the sides of adjacent centers, just expanding that. So you have to average about positions of these centers and about this and over these angles. And after that, we get a distribution function of the diagonal splittings. So these calculations give us the following estimate. So it's indeed, this the spread appears proportional to diffusion constant, and it goes to denominator for the phasing rate. So this is what we think. So now I can make some intermediate conclusions. No. This formula doesn't work. I'll explain you. I need the following. I need the typical distance between my scattering centers should be scaled with this energy somehow. So if I make diffusion constant infinite, I have to remove my scattering centers, and the effect disappears. So there is no generalization. So this is an intermediate formula. Okay, so the results are the following, that they can be responsible in principle. At very low temperatures, the phasing rate should vanish, so no miracles. But experiments were not done at this temperature. It's very difficult to do dissipative experiments at too low temperatures. So, and there are two mechanisms which can be responsible for this slowing down. Now, what's not understood yet? That's probably the most interesting. Okay, you have the spins, effective spins, two level systems. And if they contribute to dephasing, they should also contribute to energy relaxation rate. So you can, in principle, make experiment where you make hot electrons and you measure relaxation rate. And actually, a series of these very nice experiments was done. There are several groups. So this is two electrodes and alumina wire, which was in very non-equilibrium state. The bias voltage was rather large. And these strips of alumina were used as tunneling junctions to measure distribution function. So this experiment allows to measure electron distribution function at different places of the wire. Then you can solve Boltzmann equation, extract fit current voltage curves, and extract energy relaxation time. So why not to compare it with dephasing time? And people did very careful measurements of this distribution function, because they were trying to check idea of magnetic impurities. So magnetic impurities, they also lead to relaxation of energy, and first, that was first pointed out by Glasman and Kaminsky. So the first experiments were done without magnetic field. If that spins, the idea was to apply a magnetic field. So what magnetic field does, a magnetic field freezes spin in ground state. And because of that, this spins become static rather than dynamic, and you switch off this relaxation mechanism. And that was done by this group in 2001. What they found that energy relaxation rate is inelastic, a non-monotonous function of magnetic fields. At very large magnetic field, it really goes to zero, but at small magnetic field, it increases with magnetic field. So this kind of current voltage curve which is observed, and the curves were qualitatively explained without magnetic field. And we did calculations in magnetic field, trying to do a similar arrangement. It's quite extensive calculations, because we have to take into account that spins are also non-equilibrium. They interact with electrons, and they are also out of equilibrium, and everything should be solved self-consistently. So we are very happy to fit these curves in a more or less good way, but there is no too much reason to be very happy about that. because there is still a puzzle here. If you want to explain the energy relaxation rate, and you are interested to fit these curves, you have to assume that the amount of magnetic impurities is much bigger than required for dephasing. So dephasing is much more sensitive to magnetic impurities than energy relaxation. And it's more than order of magnitude discrepancy if you put numbers of that. So probably some physics is inside. What we think now? We think that maybe it's combined effect of structural disorder and magnetic impurities, because this structural disorder is much more important for energy relaxation than spins. It collects all the states within the voltage window rather than for temperature and magnetic field. Okay, so this is wording. Let me now show you how we calculated all that, because this is theory seminar. So what we do, we write the Hamiltonian. And this is Hamiltonian of our system, and this is electrons. And this is the structural defects. And the interaction between them is written in the following way. Actually, this kind of Hamiltonian was derived many years ago by Black and by Imrie independently. And it's very simple. Suppose you have some scatter in position 1 and position 2. So when it changes position, scattering potential changes a bit. So then we expand it. We expand it, and so we have the symmetric part, which is just scattering, and the part which is asymmetric shows the difference in these two states. And this is electrons. Now we rotate the bases to make the defect diagonal. Electrons Hamiltonian is left as it is. And we acquire the interaction Hamiltonian, which contains two parts. And this is Pauli matrices. So this is direct transition, sigma 1, change of the state of two-level system. And this is shaking of two-level system, just some effective field acting upon the distance, the diagonal distance between the levels. So they actually give rise to two mechanisms of dephasing, these two parts in the Hamiltonian. Okay, now we have to calculate conductance and quantum contribution to conductance. It's given by this loop diagram, the green functions. And this is so-called Couperon, which corresponds to so-called maximally cross diagram. I'll explain what does it mean. So these are the green functions, and this is the block Couperon, which is responsible for this correction. The Couperon is just some of the maximally cross diagrams in the particle hole channel, or ladder diagrams in particle-particle channel. Why? Each cross means impurity scattering. And if I go clockwise and counterclockwise, I meet the impurities in reverse order. So it's just maximally cross diagrams. For static impurities, it's quite a simple task to calculate this. But we have defects with internal degrees of freedom, so they are spins, one-half spins. And Wick's theorem doesn't work for that system, so we cannot do systematic diagrammatic technique for that, because the commutation rule for spin is different. So what we use here, so this is Couperon, just what we have to sum this ladder diagram in particle-particle channel. But what the difference between static case, this dashed lines, they convey some energy, because the defects are dynamic and they can absorb some energy. So this is inelastic Couperon. And now we have to work with these spins. Fortunately, this method were developed. I don't need strong non-equilibrium problem here, so I can work with something like Matsubara technique in the equilibrium. And this method was developed many years ago first by Abrikosov regarding conda impurities, and then by Maleev specifically for glasses. The main idea is like that. Instead of spin, you introduce so-called auxiliary fermions with some auxiliary chemical potential, which in this case you don't conserve number of states, and to avoid some overcounting of states, you have to do the calculations, and then you have to turn this chemical potential to minus infinity, and this way you remove extra loops and extra states. This is a trick. So in principle, for this problem, we can formulate it in a very compact form, and we can introduce some dashed line as a propagator. And this propagator has actually three type of vertices. Each line corresponds to so-called green function of auxiliary fermion, and this chemical potential must be tend to zero, to minus infinity after that. And then we have two propagators of this boson-like lines. The first one corresponds to real transitions, and this one corresponds to this is 1-1 vertices, spin 1-1 vertices, sigma 1, sigma 1, and this this is this part corresponds to that vertices, which is just spin susceptibility of the 1/2 spin. So we have to calculate the damping constant, and damping constant are calculated having in mind interaction of this two-level system with electrons, and this is dimensionless interaction with electrons. This this constant was introduced by Black many years ago in order to explain acoustic absorption of metallic glasses. Okay, so now we have these vertices, and we come to this integral equation for the Couperon, which is just the equation which was shown in the graph with maximally crossed diagrams. Well, if you have equation, in principle it can be solved. And fortunately for us, we can use quasi-classical approximation here, so we can use quasi-classical approach for this Planck function, because we're interested in very low frequencies. And after that, the equation appears exactly solvable. And we found exact solution in some mathematical textbook dated 1912. So, thanks to English mathematician Evans, we found the solutions. So, I don't know, I will not probably go to this machinery, but the solution is exactly what I was using to calculate the Couperon. So, just this formula was written before. So, this is the result which I just reproduced, result which was shown before. And for a given defects with the same E and gamma, this is the answer. But then we have to average that gammas with distribution function of these parameters. This is not difficult, but it takes many pages. Okay, so that's it. I don't want to come here. And I think that's all what I wanted to tell. Thank you. Well, for me, it's the simple model of this defect is like that. Suppose you have typical glass, say silicon or two. So you have silicon, and you have oxygen. It's one dimensional. So let's look at this oxygen atom. So the left hand neighbor gives you the following potential. And the right hand gives the following potential. So you have some potential, And if you calculate vibrations, you get something like Debye frequency here. It's crystal. Now let's make the following click, stretch this a bit, and then quench. So then this potential goes to the left, and this potential goes to the right. And instead of this potential, we get something like that, which is called in the Western literature Mexican head potential, but in Russian literature somehow different. But anyway, so we have tunneling state, which is very small. It's something like 0.3 of lattice constant. So that means that this potential profile is very smooth. It should be defined by quartic rather than quadratic potential. And this is why you get an atom is able to tunnel through this system. And you get a very small difference between the levels. You can really have low frequencies. This is how people look at two-level systems in typical glasses or tunneling state in metals. So you have somehow, in the crystals, there are also so-called off-central atoms, off-central defects, where the minimum of energy. Suppose you have, for example, the material which is just salt, and replace sodium by lithium, small atom. If you calculate the minimum of the potential energy, it can be, it can occupy two states, not in the center, which are degenerate if you don't have long-range fields. So they are very well known since 60s, and there are masers working on this tunneling effect in insulators. So it's very well-known stuff. In glasses, this is a typical model for low temperature properties of glasses. This is in metals. I think we just have structural disorder. Weak localization is also observed in semiconductor systems. And in semiconductors, there are much more strong candidates for this structural defects. And they are the following. So usually people want to study two-dimensional gas and the interface of two semiconductors like gallium arsenide and gallium aluminum arsenide. So you need electrons here, so you introduce some doping impurities. And usually people introduce spacer here, non-doped things. The reason is that if they far, the high Fourier components of potential decay, and this is why I don't have backscattering, you have good mobility. So then here some of electrons are driven to this interface. And you have some donors which are empty, and donors which are occupied by electrons. So if the compensation is not strong, you have just some natural electronic two-level system. Electron can hop between the states, producing this also this low-frequency vibrations. These kind of things are really studied in connection with noises in this semiconductor devices. So this is structural, this electronic type of two-level systems. Of course, I don't know what is a microscopic model for the for this material, for these metals which we have studied.
How important is the fact that you essentially, when coming up with the Hamiltonian that you're using, neglect the higher excited states in a possible, you know, physical double-well potential?
Here? Okay. That's a good question. So let's come, let's discuss this two-level system based on the structural disorder. So you can do the following. You have to write typical Hamiltonian for potential energy. You write something like atomic energy. Then you write something x over a squared. And write some small coefficient eta here to have soft. And then you have to write something like x over a to 4 to have it stable. This is two-level Hamiltonian when this is negative or small. It's all the same for me. Then you can put the following. You can make a Schrodinger equation, making these items of the same importance, and you get some critical energy. So if you put some atomic constant and so on, but make quartic potential instead of quadratic, you get the four characteristic energy, something like 30K for glassy parameters. So if you study this typical potential made by this critical potential made by this Hamiltonian, you have two states which are very close, and the next state somewhere in 30K. So real processes which involve these levels are not important at low temperatures. They were observed in neutron scattering in glasses, but this is completely different range of energies. So it's not important. Regarding virtual processes, they are not important also, because if you study tunneling, only these processes are important. But if you have all the virtual transitions, you have to take into account all the levels, and they cancel each other. So nothing is left except the exponential part, which I have taken into account.
Well, a system preparation that would change the number of particle level systems. So you could compare diffusion quantitatively with diffusion time.
Well, that's a good idea, but I think this group, Norman Birch is a person, probably the main person behind that. They are doing continuing experiments. So up to now, they try to make a specific number of magnetic impurities. So they dope some magnetic impurities. Of course, it's possible to make some irradiation of this virus and to produce some defects. What is difficult is to get hold of that of number of these two-level systems. How can you check their number independently? Of course, if you have a bulk sample, then you can measure specific heat, you can measure sound absorption or whatever. But in this virus, so I don't think that it's easy. Could be a good idea, but I don't think it's easy.
Thank you.